to Tabuk, a podcast about banned, censored, and controversial children's books. I'm Adriana.
And I'm Maria.
In this episode, we're talking about the iconic 90s horror series, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark by Alvin Schwartz. These books were the most banned books in America in the 90s, just because parents across the country thought they were too scary for kids. Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween.
Do you like Halloween?
I've never really celebrated Halloween. I have dressed up and gone to like parties, but it wasn't a big thing. Like, I've never trick-or-treated. Is that how you conjugate that?
Sure.
I've never trick-or-treated. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you like Halloween?
I do because I like fall, I think. I like the ambience. But I don't like being scared that much. And especially as a child, I was very nervous. So it always sort of stressed me out. Which brings me to this week's book, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark by Alvin Schwartz. These are 3 books, actually. It's a series. And they are collections of scary stories. Alvin Schwartz was a journalist originally, and he collected stories based on legends and folklore, urban legends from around the world, and retold them. And I remember seeing these at my local library because the covers terrified me. If you haven't looked up what the art looks like, a good chunk of why these books are so scary is the art. They are so menacing.
I feel like this is your version of looking at the Animorph books. I remember looking at those and freaking out. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is your way of living that.
I looked at them and then I looked away. So yeah, they were published between 1981 and 1991, and unlike a lot of the books that we've discussed and will be discussing, they faced objections from parents just for being too scary, pretty much.
They look terrifying.
Right? They faced a lot of bans. The series as a whole was number one on the list of the ALA's list of challenged books throughout the 90s. It wasn't until the 2000s that it dropped to number 7. Harry Potter was number 1.
Oh.
But it was still above His Dark Materials, Forever by Judy Blume, The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Yeah, so basically what the author did is he took, like, a whole bunch of stories. Some of them are based in Greek mythology. Some of them are retellings of, like, gothic novels, urban legends. And then he sort of simplifies them, makes them super spooky. It's sort of like, you know, how fairy tales were originally super dark, mm-hmm. and then they got sanitized. It feels kind of like that. There's a lot of variations on the theme of something is coming to get you. It's coming up the stairs. It's upstairs. It's in the hall.
I would like to note that I would have cried if I had read this as a child.
Same. 100%. I'm so glad that I knew my own limits. So, yeah, there are songs. There are, like, games that kind of remind me of some of the, like, online creepypasta. But a lot of it is just kind of, like, gross, like, this is what happens to you when you're dead, like worms crawling in and out of your eyeballs, that kind of thing.
Ew.
My favorite story is called High Beams. It's a lot of people's favorite story. It's about a girl who's coming back. She's a high school student. She's coming back from a basketball game, and it's late at night, and she's driving alone on, like, a backcountry road, and there's a car that's following her, and she's kind of freaked out because every once in a while the car will turn on its bright headlights and it'll keep them on for like a few minutes and then it'll like dim them again. So she turns into like her like driveway area where no one ever goes, and the car just like keeps following. And she just gets more and more freaked out. This car is just behind her, occasionally turning on the high beams and then turning them off. She finally gets home and runs into her house, yells at her dad to call the police because there's a terrifying man following her. And the police get there and start to arrest the man. And he says, "No, you don't need to arrest me. Arrest the guy in the back seat of that girl's car, because there was a guy crouched behind the driver's seat and he had a knife. And whenever he started standing up to like attack her, the guy would turn on his high beams and he would be afraid of like being seen. So he would creep back down again." And that's high beams.
I'm going to say there's this Mexican urban legend, and it's not really that old. It's like a couple of years old. Mm-hmm. And basically it was about this girl who apparently left her car in valet parking at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And after that, she went to go get gas. And something that happens in Mexico that does not happen in the US is that there is a guy at the gas station who pumps the gas for you, so you never get out of your car. And basically she went to go get gas, and the guy was like, "Miss, can you exit your car?" And she was like, "Oh, what a creep." And in the end she does, and he tells her that there's like somebody in like the back of her car, and he's like, "There's a man in there and he's gonna kill you." And apparently, yeah, I don't really know it very well, but it was this urban legend that went around telling you to be really careful when you left your car at valet parking. I don't know why. I don't know if it actually happened or not, but that just reminded me of this.
I like the fake out of like the girl is afraid of the wrong thing, but there is some guy to be afraid of, actually.
Yeah.
So attempts to ban this book sort of happened kind of independently across the US in the early 90s. Some of the bans had kind of religious undertones, the sort of mm-hmm. idea of like the death aspect being not good for kids. But again, mostly it was just that parents thought the stories were too scary. In 1991, there was an elementary school in Washington where the PTA collected 70 signatures demanding its removal. Sandy Vanderberg, who was the president of the PTA, became kind of a celebrity around trying to ban this book. She went on Good Morning America. She also gave...
What was her name?
Sandy Vanderberg. Do you know her?
Okay, sorry. My brain translated that to Andy Samberg, and I was like, what? The guy who's like in the Facebook movie? Is that him?
This is his first big break. She also gave an interview to the Seattle Times where she said, "This is adding fuel to the fire, giving kids ideas of what to do to frighten other kids. There is so much violence in them," referring to the books. Which, like, again, we have this idea that books are mm-hmm. instruction manuals and children will simply copy everything that they read.
Of course, that is how books work. That mm-hmm. is exactly what happens.
That's it, yep. There was another article, same newspaper, a year later, so she was still at it. She gave another interview. She said that she was upset by the graphic illustration and the violent stories. She says, "It put ideas in kids' heads. I don't understand why we would be promoting these kinds of actions to our kids."
Kind of sounds like the one who was getting ideas was her.
Yeah, having read them, there's nothing in there that you really want to emulate. like, you don't want to be the kid who's cowering in his bed waiting for, like, the corpse to find him. Like,
you mean you don't want to, like, break into somebody's car with a knife?
Okay, that does sound kind of glamorous. My spotlight. Yeah, so in 1995, a father in Connecticut called for the books to be pulled from that school library. He said, "I can appreciate the creativity, but the images in those books are surreal. A throat being torn out, a liver being eaten. These images are the stuff of nightmares." He said, "I'm not looking for censorship. I'm just looking for standards."
Wait, he said a liver being eaten is the stuff of nightmares. Mm-hmm. Does he not know what pate is?
Good point. Yeah, that's not a good example.
People eat liver all the time. People eat liver all the time. Were they eating it out of the body, like raw or something? Or
I mean, maybe, but really, yeah, that is a focus on the wrong thing. It's like the, you know, the horrible thing about high beams is the driving.
Yeah. It's bad for the other driver because you're blinding them. So, yeah, you know.
Yeah, there's one instance of a parent actually removing his daughter from a school.
What?
The daughter had apparently nightmares for months after the wonderful sausage, a story from one of the books, was read in class. It's about a butcher who murders people and makes them into sausage. It's very like Sweeney Todd.
Well, to be fair, I do not think that's appropriate to read in a classroom.
Yeah.
To a bunch of children. Like not because there's anything wrong with the stories, but you never know which child is, like, very sensitive to those things, so I wouldn't read that to a bunch of children that I don't really know that well.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because unlike most books that are banned, I can really see the parents' point of view. Like, I think removing the books from libraries is a step too far, but especially, you know, in modern days where we're talking about, you know, boundaries and the importance of not traumatizing children. I feel like we would be having a similar conversation today, but I think more people would be on the side of the parents.
Probably. But okay, let's also be fair in that children are very easily scared. Like, for example, Toy Story for me was like traumatizing because I believed that my toys would like wake up at night and murder me if I wasn't nice to them, and I still believe that the tiniest bit.
So Betsy Hearn, who was the editor of the Bulletin of the Center for Children's Books, said these stories help children deal with reality by putting faces on what they're afraid of. The things children fear don't go away just because they can't read about them. It's a tragic mistake to deprive a child of a book that will allow them to face and discuss the things that make them afraid. Repressing those fears only makes them more afraid.
So, what fears does she think children have that are represented in these books?
These books are very morbid, so there's a fixation on death, which I think is a healthy thing to work out when you're a kid and you're sort of coming to terms with the fact that that's a thing that might happen to you one day, actually. But some of the stories, they're definitely like fantasy violence. Like, I don't think children are worried about the contents of sausages. If they get a benefit from that story, it's not because it's directly applicable to their life. You know,
I don't think any child is like eating a sausage and thinking, I wonder what this is made of. It's just a sausage. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I came across an article in the New York Times by a horror writer named Victor Laval. And the article was called "Scary Stories Gave Me Nightmares as a Kid, Thank Goodness." So he read them when he was like 8 or 9, and he said, "I count these among my essential influences. The stories acted as a divining rod, signaling the morbid well within me," which I think is great. And I mean, again, these books were incredibly popular. There were a lot of kids who loved them, but also like I was definitely personally a kid who had no morbid within me. So it's, you know, I think being able to choose for yourself is really important.
Yes. Yes, I do think the important part is, one, knowing yourself and knowing what your boundaries are. And all obviously, when you're a child, this is not easy. But your parents do. Your parents know what you can, like, handle or not, usually. if they're like normal people. So like, for example, my mom wouldn't have read, like, let me read these books because she would have known that I would have freaked out.
I remember I was like 15 or something and I read The Cask of Amontillado. Is that how it's pronounced?
I think so. There's this song on YouTube that's great. It's about the story and it goes like, The Cask of Amontillado. It's really good. You should listen to it.
That's going to be our new theme song.
It's such a good song.
I feel like that's on the same kind of level of scariness as a lot of the stories here. And it gave me nightmares.
I loved it.
It's so scary. He was like trapped there and he didn't know what was going on and then he knew what was going on.
I loved it. I thought it was great. That and The Telltale Heart was like, oh my God, it traumatized me. I loved it so much. I swore I could hear like a heart beating like everywhere and I'd be like, who did I murder? I was like, yes, this is so glamorous.
Incredible.
Obviously, I grew up to be a very different person than who I was as a child.
Yeah, actually, Maria currently is crouched in her garret holding a heart, just a whole heart.
Just holding it. I'm kissing it as we speak. Just tiny little kisses, not making out, just tiny little nice kisses.
So yeah, it's kind of quaint now, I think, to see this incredibly controversial book series that was challenged, you know, not because it's part of a larger culture war, not because of race or sexuality or gender, but just because it's freaking scary. It's almost like a simpler time.
It seems like all parents were worried about was their children having nightmares, and I can relate to that. I think that's a good thing to be worried about.
I generally kind of disagree with the premise that book bans have sort of just started getting political. I think they've always been pretty political, but this one does seem less political than most.
Why are you laughing?
Just that poor girl who like couldn't look at a sausage ever again.
Okay, so there's this one Tumblr post about this girl who is a lesbian now that she's a grown-up, and apparently she used to have nightmares from David Bowie's bulge in The Labyrinth. And her mom was like, this is all David Bowie's fault when she came out. And she was like, oh, this is David Bowie and his bulge. Like, this is what happens. You turn into a lesbian. That poor girl never looked at a sausage ever again. Wink, nudge.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have a fantastic Halloween.
Yes, have a happy Halloween.
See you next week.
We thank you for listening to our podcast, and we hope to see you again. Well, not see you.
We'll see you, but you won't see us. We're coming up your stairs. We're in your hallway. We're opening your door.